sure about. Absolutely central as well as really fascinating question for us, I think. And the question runs something like this: where's God in the world? Where's God? I mean, the problem we have in this passage from the book of Numbers and the Gospel of Mark is the same problem. I mean, these are the people that followers of Moses and some of the disciples, so they knew where God was and where God wasn't, and were very quick to draw those lines. Both Moses and Jesus protest the blindness of the people who insisted that these people were coming out of some God-free zone. It had nothing to do with kingdom of God or what God intended for us. And if you look at the career of Jesus, it is really even more fascinating, because the people who were most blind, to take the gospel at their face, were the religious people. The Pharisees, the most pious, the most seriously devout and earnest Jews in first century Judaism. And the priests were something of a rival. They were known as quislings and collaborators and basically money grubbers, collaborating with the Roman occupiers. So, what do we do? What do we do? I think, first of all, it's a profound cautionary note. Points up the ambiguity of all things that we call religious, and religion always, in whatever form, is a human construct. Now, God doesn't need religion. God doesn't have a religion. God doesn't get up every morning and say, "Oh, are you nice? Oh, you are really terrific. I'm really glad you're around." And because it is human, it is marked by the ambiguity of all things human. Again, that epiphanic moment that I had years and years ago, maybe it was even in the seminary, although that was not a congenial environment, but an insight, where it dawned on me, I had been taught that if it was Catholic, it was good. It follows that it was good, when really it's the reverse. It is the case. If it's good, then it must be Catholic. And so the question becomes, what kind of criteria do you use to judge the presence or absence of God? Well, this is not a simple question. And as I said before, I think the first step in this process is a cautionary one, namely to write fairly lightly to one's own presuppositions about what is godly and what is not godly. And to even be careful, particularly, about the possibility of being blinded, deafened, by one's own religiosity. And unfortunately, in the church today, there's a real encroaching danger of this kind of premature certainty about where God is and where God is not. If any of you read the Pope's lecture in Regensburg, an academic exercise, to be sure, that Bob put on the internet a couple of days ago, you see an instance of what I think is a problem. And the pattern is consistent with the papacy of this man, who is very much a cerebral figure. And the danger there, of course, is loving abstractions and being obtuse to the concrete reality before them. And we're all liable to that. So maybe we have to go back to that glorious passage in Paul's letter to the Philippians. Whatever is good, whatever is noble, whatever is noble, to add whatever is generous, whatever is liberating. That's our doctrine. And as the great Carl Rahner would put it, God sometimes is anonymous. God does not bear, you know, all the anticipated, expected hallmarks. He would like, he would love that kind of security. He would love that kind of certainty. This is God, or this is not God. So maybe the first step again is to call us to a holy uncertainty. One writer put it, the grace of self-doubt. That's the word there. And therefore, out of that, to